kwamnyako na uhuru na utukufu hata milele.
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Jambo, everyone, and welcome to episode 16 of Radio Harambe, the official podcast of JamboEveryone.com, covering Disney's Animal Kingdom, Walt Disney World, and also a little wildlife conservation. I am Dave McBride, coming to you from the Harambe Radio Harambe studios, and joining me from somewhere in the world, a man who is preparing his Amazonian research boat for his own jingle cruise, it's Safari Mike. Mike, how are you?
I'm well. I am in the Arabuku Sukuku Forest. Sukoki.
You better get that right when you're there.
Yeah, I know. There's no locals around me, so I'm okay right now.
Oh, good. And what does one do in the Arab forest?
Well, it's one of the last remnant populations of the golden-rumped elephant shrew, which is a rare little mammal that has a very long nose, hence the name elephant, and golden fur on its behind, hence the name golden-rumped. So it's a very rare species. There's less than 10,000 probably in the world, and most of them in these little, due to habitat destruction along the coastal forests, of Kenya, they're in trouble. So we're here documenting how many are left and if they have the appropriate food sources.
And they're rodents?
They are. They're shrews.
So how small are we talking here?
We are talking 4 inches long, six inches long.
So tiny.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. On this show, we are going to talk about all the news from the Animal Kingdom, the rest of Walt Disney World, and then in our feature section, we'll bring on some special guests to discuss the Wilderness Explorers game. Before we get into the news, though, Mike, I just wanted to make mention of one thing right before we went to recording this, which was a few days from ago from the time you're downloading this. We got the news right before we went into the studio that Diane Disney Miller had passed away. She was 79 years old. She apparently had a fall a few weeks back that she never quite recovered from. We all know Diane Disney Miller as Walt's eldest daughter, and she just passed away. So we wish the best to the Disney family. This is obviously the a passing of a legend in the Disney community and in the Disney in the Disney company as well. She was very withdrawn, as really all of the women in the Disney family were. They just were not upfront and in, as part of the, they just never, what's the word I'm looking for? They never took a sort of an active role in the marketing of the Disney, but she was always available for things. She was, helped spearhead the Walt Disney Museum. There's a whole list of other things that she's done. And like I said, she just passed away a couple of, I think only a matter of hours ago. So,
yeah, there's not much to add to that other than she's with Walt and they're probably riding a train.
Probably. So let's go right into the local news. And the first one is really the biggest one. We might as well get it out of the way first. And that is that according to the latest issue of the Mickey Monitor, a publication sent to annual pass holders, the Festival of the Lion King is set to close in January, January 5th, I believe it says specifically, and it will not reopen in its new theater until July, a full 6 months later. The one thing I want to say is that before we move on is I have not yet received my copy of the Mickey Monitor. I wanted to report this anyway because a couple of people I know who have, as well as a couple of reports online, have stated that this is in there. I was going to hold out for it, but the Mickey Monitor tends to be kind of like the My Disney Experience app. It kind of comes and goes as it pleases. So I may never get it.
Yeah, it doesn't like you that much, right?
No, it doesn't like me that much at all. So let's just, with that out of the way, this does seem to be the information that we have. And Mike, let me just say this first. I think the two of us kind of were hoping that this wouldn't be the case. We couldn't really quite understand why it would be, but we have heard rumors that this was going to be the case for a little while, and I think maybe at least I personally thought, it doesn't make any sense, but it looks like it does. And 6 months downtime to move theaters, man, they do it on Broadway faster than that.
It does seem strange that they're going to take that much time to shut down the show and Camp Minnie-Mickey and move it over to Harambe. I'm not sure if it's telling you that they really want to get started with Avatar Land, and they don't want to wait another 6 months to put, you know, shovels into the ground to start that. The village, the Harambe construction is not going to be completed until July. I don't know. And you know, the other thing is you have to worry about is that, you know, hopefully the area will be ready by July. I mean, it could be even longer than that, really. It just goes to show you again that, you know, what I've been hearing from sources that there's a lot more going on behind those walls, as I've said before, that it's going to be maybe some eateries and some shops and stuff like that. It's not just a theater. It's sort of given credence to that. But I guess what they wanted was they wanted to get started on Avatar Land pretty quickly.
And we all know that Imagineering turns like a cruise ship nowadays, and that things just don't get built with any sort of speed at all. So, I mean, that could be coming into play here. But it does seem very unfortunate. I mean, 6 months is a long time. They're doing a lot of construction in this park. There's a lot of things that just don't look as good as they were. And for a six-month period, it's going to be, you know, not a lot to do there. And, you know, or I shouldn't say not a lot to do, but there's going to be some subtractions to the schedule and some big ugly walls and things like that. And that, you know, that's a shame. But it is what it is. I guess we all were hoping it wouldn't be this long. But in a related article, in a related story, because this is all three of these are related, really intertwined into this whole Avatar project. Mm-hmm. It seems, according to reports just today from WDWMagic.com, that's, you know, a website that I'm sure everybody's familiar with, height test balloons were seen in the skies over the Animal Kingdom, just in the area behind Rainforest Cafe. Just quickly, if you've never seen one of these before and you don't know what it is, what they do is they float balloons up in the air to the, you know, approximate altitude of the peaks or whatever dimensions that they want to examine of something that they're about to begin construction on, so that they can get an idea of where in the park you can see it from. Because certainly in years past, Imagineering was very, very concerned about sight lines and being able to see things that, you know, specifically not being able to see things that don't belong in your eyesight in a park. So, for instance, seeing a, cowboy in Tomorrowland is the famous one. That, you know, that Walt says he saw a guy walking down the street in Tomorrowland with a cowboy, you know, one of the cowboy cast members. So, and it's things like that. Now, Imagineering is a little bit less worried about that than they used to be these days.
Especially in the Animal Kingdom.
You know? Yeah. So,
to be honest, you can see Everest from Africa.
Right.
And pretty much anywhere. And I suspect you'll be able to see the mountain, the floating mountains or whatever from anywhere too. And that's sort of the appeal of it too. You can see Everest from so far away. You could see the Tree of Life from anywhere.
Now, they say it's in the area behind Rainforest Cafe, so we're assuming this is Avatar, correct?
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
So they float these balloons up, and I was reading reports of, you know, 6-7 stories up in the air, which I don't like taking that information because people on the ground are a bad judge of height, believe me.
Yeah, I've read 4 stories, too.
Yeah, see, so it's very different. So, but at least it's given us the idea of the grand scale of what we're getting here, I think.
Oh, and I think the model that we saw with Rohde and James Cameron, you know, looking onto that little model of the... I mean, that mountain is going to be at least, you know... I don't know, what'd you say, like 100 feet tall or whatever?
Looks that way, yeah, maybe even more.
So, I mean, I think we're... It's pretty obvious that it's going to be fairly significant in size.
Right. And In another related piece, now again, this is all related. We're talking about the Festival of the Lion King and stuff. Mike, just today on the blog, jomboeveryone.com, you see the blog right in the middle. We had an article by you posted. This was just today, Tuesday. So if you want to go back a couple of days, if you're not listening to this right away, about how perhaps this new theater, this Avatar causing a new theater in Harambe, might be causing some changes to some menus around the area. Kind of the trickle down effect here. So why don't you just briefly go over that that article you did there?
Yeah, so the issue is essentially Tamu, which is one of my favorite counter services currently. The food that they have there is not real quick. It's not stuff that's, you know, under heat lamps and you can just shovel it into a plate and throw it at people as soon as they order it. It's stuff that has to be sort of put together, whether it's the chicken salad sandwich, whether it's the salad, whether it's the pulled beef. So it's the theory being that if hundreds of people come strolling out of Festival of the Lion King at 12:30 or whatever,
right,
looking for a bite to eat, Tamu is not set up for that. So my understanding is soon, and by soon meaning, you know, this coming weekend, the menu is going to change to be basically more capable of doling out a lot of food quickly.
Code for worse.
What was that?
Code for worse.
I think so.
let's say what it is. Let's.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still going to be a chicken salad. There's going to be some chicken and curry. Basically, it's going to be some of the stuff I think you see. It's almost going to be sort of a counter service version of some of the stuff you get at Tusker House.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Which, like in Tusker House, is, you know, buffet stations that you can shovel it on your plate and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So we'll see what the menu actually holds. And I've also heard that Kusafiri is going to switch out their flatbread for a wrap, basically a sausage spinach wrap for breakfast. So we're, you know, keep an eye out for that.
Just as long as they don't get rid of the African spice cake. If they do, I'm going to go down there and stage a sit-in.
I've not heard that, but this all goes back to sort of what we were talking about, you know, a few moments ago in terms of what's going on behind Harambe. I mean, if they're prepared to build another counter service back there, which is what I've been hearing, that there's going to be another, at least one other food, you know, thing back there, that's going to probably also have to be able to handle large crowd at once. I mean, we've both seen what Camp Mini Mickey looks like
when
Festival of the Lion King empties out.
Right.
You know, hundreds of people strolling around.
Exactly.
And if it's the 11:30 or 12:30 show, most of those people would be looking, hey, you know, it's lunchtime. Let's go get something to eat.
Exactly.
And then Tamu, as it currently is just not set up for that, inundated by a lot of people.
The trickle down effect of that isn't just here. I mean, crowd movement dictates just about everything they do logistically. So if you think about changes that are going to happen to the entertainment locations, the entertainment schedules, a parade, things like all of that's now going to be affected. The two shows that they have that are both well attended, both dump thousands of people out into the streets. They are both at the far ends of the park.
Right.
Where by the time they get to the more populated areas of the park, they're kind of trickled out. Right. People have kind of thinned out a bit. But now you're going to be dumping five times a day, if not more, you know, 1,500 people into the most congested area of the park as it currently stands.
Yep.
You know, so it only makes sense that there's going to be some changes. And the problem that I have is that more of it is going to end up, you know, the thing that I'm worried about is that more of it is going to go the way the Tamu is, which is the kind of intimate, the intimacy and the coolness of Harambe, that may be a thing of the past. And it may be a bigger, more open place.
It could be.
I worry about that.
Yeah, well, at least, I mean, I'm not sure about open place because, I mean, it is what it is. But, yeah, the food, that might take a turn for the worse here.
Well, on that somber note, let's take a break and come back with the world news. Where I'm sure we'll always picking people up there in the world news section. So we'll take a break and be back on Radio Harambe in just a second. Jennifer Green of Destinations in Florida is the official travel partner of Radio Harambe and JomboEveryone.com. Jen can do everything you need done in order to book your next Walt Disney World vacation and have the time of your life. She is an expert in everything Disney and will remove all the stress of booking your trip. And she is as committed to conservation as we are. So every vacation you book, or even every quote you request, means Jen and Destinations in Florida will make a donation to the Jombo Everyone conservation effort. You can contact Jen directly by emailing her at jennifer.g@destinationsinflorida.com or by calling her directly at 443-424-0181. You can also head over to jomboeveryone.com and click the Destinations in Florida icon to get your vacation started. Seriously, what can be better than booking a Disney World vacation while helping to save wildlife? And welcome back to Radio Harambe. It is time for the world news, and for that, as always, we hand it over to Safari Mike. Mike, what is new in the world this week?
Well, let's start off by talking about some closures. So some refurbishments at the Magic Kingdom. There are actually going to be quite a few. Relatively lengthy ones. Pinocchio's Village House is going down from February 17 to March 31st for a refurbishment. The Plaza Restaurant.
That's a long refurbishment for a restaurant.
It is relatively long. And, you know, the weird thing is the Plaza Restaurant's going down February 17th as well. And going all the way, and that's going to be refurbished until March 16th. Huh. So that's two eateries that are going to be down for approximately 6 weeks to a month or whatever. But at the same time, which seems kind of odd to me.
It's the Magic Kingdom, so you're not missing anything.
Well, you're not missing anything, but people have to eat.
But maybe it'll encourage them to go someplace else and eat something decent. Go ahead. I'm sorry. You're going to start me on that already.
I mean, I understand one is a table service and one's a counter service, right, but still right. It's, you know, people eating. I mean, it's just going to create maybe, you know, more crowds at the world famous, delicious Cosmic Rays.
I was actually just in the Plaza. Maybe it's a kitchen thing they need to do. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. All right, the next one is the TTA, or as I call it, the Wedway People Mover, is going down from February 10th to March 27th. So basically 6 to 7 weeks of a refurbishment. So a couple of things going down for a fairly significant amount of time in February through most of March.
So nearly 2 months Wedway People Mover, Tomorrowland Transit Authority. Yeah. But nothing in specific. We're just shutting it down and cleaning tracks or something. I mean,
I have no idea. No idea.
So we've heard nothing other than it's just a maintenance thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm it's going to be back. You know, it's not going to be
right.
Yeah, but okay. Now for our second story, Sid Kahinga's is closed to become a My Magic Plus service center. For those that don't know, Sid Kahinga's was the store that when you walked into Disney Hollywood Studios, it was immediately on your left. It used to sell like collectibles and things like that from movies, you know, like autograph pictures and things like that.
Sure.
It has slowly grown over time to be less that and more just sort of movie souvenirs.
Right.
But now it's gone. It is a My Magic Plus service center. So there'll be specialist cast members there to help you, you know, with your Fast Pass Pluses, dealing with the app and all that kind of stuff. I'm assuming there'll be more of these as we move along here.
Yeah.
But for right now, Sid Kahinga's is now a My Magic Plus service center.
Now it's a once legendary place. I mean, everybody who's a fan of the Hollywood Studios or Disney MGM Studios, especially somebody from the first 5 or 6 years of its existence, would always point out Sid Kahinga's is one of the kind of cool little spots. You know, it harkens back to the days where Disney actually sold things other than plush Mickey Mouse dolls and things like that.
That in the villain store.
Yeah. I mean, this is a...
Hollywood Studios used to be a great place to shop. It really used to be a great place to shop, but not so much anymore.
This is... You know, it's hard for me to get excited about the My Magic whatever, and this is just another reason to... I mean, this is just a casualty that didn't have to happen. I mean, there isn't another place we can put up a kiosk, but you know what? When you've got $1 billion invested into something you can't get working right, I guess this is what you got to do.
You know? I guess so. And it's coming come hell or high water.
I guess so. So what's next?
All right. The Disney Parks blog had released some information about the Spiced Road Table. And for those of you who don't know what that is the new lakefront restaurant that will be present on the World Showcase Lagoon right out front, right outside of Morocco. Go on the Disney Parks blog and you'll see the concept art for it. And you also see some of the items that will be on this tapas menu, which is, as Dave well knows, right in my wheelhouse in terms of food.
Moroccan tapas. Unbelievable.
Yeah, this sounds... I'm going to read you some of the items that they are posted up here, and you tell me that this doesn't sound awesome. Zesty harissa chicken drumettes, a Mediterranean omelet with sausage, potatoes, and caramelized onions, mussels with preserved lemons and tomato sauce, Moroccan sausage with a fresh tomato salad, and garlicky jumbo shrimp in a spicy chili pepper sauce.
Okay.
I like it. I mean, I like tapas for one. I like the Moroccan food for another. It's inspired by the outdoor cafes along the Mediterranean. It's accentuated by the icy shades of blue of the famous Blue City of, I don't know how to pronounce this, but Chekhawen?
I just like hearing you try.
In the Morocco's Rift Mountains. Have you ever seen the city?
No.
It's amazing. I Googled it before we went on so that I could see what they were talking about here. It's the city essentially in the mountains, and it's a relatively large city, but all the buildings are, you know, a couple stories tall at most and made of stone. But they're all painted in this blue that makes the city almost look like it's glowing blue. It's very bizarre and bizarre looking, but beautiful.
Wow.
And anyway, along the path, there will also be some sort of like small stores that will also be a part of this building. So I like what they're doing here at Morocco.
And I like Morocco in general. I like Morocco as a pavilion. I think there's, you know, it's one of those places where everybody says there's nothing to do here, but there really is. I mean, it's one of the few immersive experiences. You go in the back of the Moroccan pavilion and you really are out off the World Showcase promenade and into a different place. You know, and I like it there, and I'm glad they're doing it. I'm also glad that they're using, as a rule of thumb, I'm glad that they're using the World Showcase Lagoon there, putting that to use more over the years. And this is another one of those things. So,
well, the one negative about that though is the more of these types of things that you build, the less viewing areas for the people walking around World Showcase for illuminations.
Yeah, but that's true, and I think that's always going to be a consideration. There are an awful lot of open spaces, though. I mean, there's only so, you know.
That's true, but you build a couple more of these, and there might not be much.
Good point.
And
okay.
Last story, in one that I just made me want to throw up when I read this one.
Oh, good.
We talked about the tiered system on our Good, Bad, Ugly, and Nude show. And
you're talking about the tiered, just to go back a little, the tiered FastPass Plus system,
yes.
Which came and ruined my day while I was down there. It means that what they're doing is they're taking a few of the most popular attractions normally and putting them into tier one. And you only get to have one of those in your day there. And then you get two fast passes for something you would never need a fast pass for. So, go ahead.
Right. So, one of the things you said when we were talking about this is, you know, let's hold out hope that we're going to limit it to Epcot as a way to sort of get people to those sponsored attractions that nobody ever goes on.
Right.
And I said, if that was the case, I'd still hate it, but you know, I could deal with it. Well... It's apparently going to be more widespread than that. Hollywood Studios will be testing the tier system coming very soon, sometime this week, I think, if it hasn't even started. It might have started by the time you're listening to this podcast. And essentially, the tier one will be, and it's a little bit strange. Tier one is Toy Story Midway Mania, obviously. Rock and Roller Coaster, obviously, Fantasmic, and the world famous and highly rated by Dave, Beauty and the Beast stage show.
Oh, are you kidding me? So what they're going to do there, Mike, what that means is when the other ones no longer have fast passes, the person who doesn't know is going to go, oh, but look, I do have one available in Tier 1. We could get the Beauty and the Beast show.
Yeah, because that'll never be filled out.
Of course not.
And the other, I mean, I've heard some people say that they want to make sure there's at least one little kid-friendly one for the people with, a couple of kids that are not going to do roller coasters. Of course, they would do Toy Story Midway Mania, but that's neither.
Of course.
So the strange thing to me, and I didn't expect the Great Movie Ride or Star Tours to be in Tier 1, but the fact that Tower of Terror is in Tier 2 was a little surprising to me.
Well, it's the one, it sounds like the one kind of, maybe they're understanding that they really can't do this to people. Like, you really can't discourage people from going on your best attractions.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe that's how they're going to do it. So maybe in the future, the tweak will be like at Epcot, they might put the Maelstrom into Tier 2.
I guess.
To understand that we can't really only have everybody going on one of these and then not going on either of the other two because the lines are too long, and then instead making their whole day about Ellen's Energy Adventure, because right. then the park's just not going to test good with in the marketing tests that people do on the way out the door.
This is so atrocious that I don't even know where to begin. First of all, Bob Iger and Jay Rizzullo and all their nonsense. I mean, the two things you kept hearing all the time was, with My Magic Plus, was, hey, we are going to be, this will allow you to make the vacation that you want.
Exactly.
That's a lie. That's obviously a bullface lie. They were lying to your face when they said that.
It's the complete opposite.
Because what they're saying, what they're really doing is they're making you book the vacation that they want exactly. you to book.
Exactly.
I mean, it is atrocious that they're doing this.
Yep.
The to me, I was a proponent of the FastPass Plus. I thought it was a good idea in concept, and we've talked about this before in terms of the execution may not be up there. But anyway, the idea behind it, I liked. But to do the tiered system, that is telling you we're spending $1 billion system. They spent $1 billion to implement a system that is not as good for the consumer as the old one. Because there's no doubt in my mind that the old FastPass system for you, the guest, in terms of exploring the park and seeing the park the way you want to see it, was better than what they just spent $1 billion to do.
Yep. And with the Yeti broken and with the Imagination Pavilion, a shell of its former self, and with, the backstage, the backlot tour, down to almost shambles. With all of these things, when you think about all of the things that over the years we all say could use some help, could use some fixing, no. $1 billion gets spent on this. This is what you get.
Which is not even, listen, we could debate all day long if the FastPass Plus system is better for the way that I booked it, a couple of months ago or a month or so ago. Where you get 3 fast passes,
right,
for one park,
sure,
per day. We can argue back and forth whether or not that's better than the old fast pass system or not.
Right.
There is no, no one can argue that for the guest, this fast pass system, the fast pass plus with the tiers, is better than the old fast pass system. Because what they're telling you right now, at least for Epcot, is basically what they're saying: you get one fast pass, because it's either Test Tack or Soarin'. That's it. The other ones are essentially useless. So they're essentially telling you you're only getting one fast pass.
Exactly.
And in this one, they're telling you you get 2.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just, and anybody who sits there and tries to say, well, Fast Pass Plus is better than the old Fast Pass for the guests. Not for Disney. Obviously, they think this is better for them. Obviously. They're delusional if they think it's better. They're delusional. They're just soaking in the pixie dust.
Absolutely right.
I'm so annoyed. You have no idea.
Well, let's just
this is worse than the Viking Museum.
Yeah, let's just hope that this turns into, you know, that the outrage over it is enough that maybe we can, you know, we'll start to evolve this into something that actually is supposed to do to make things better. I don't have any personally. I don't have any faith in that. I think the end game all along was this to better dictate guest flow and guest movement. For a variety of reasons, I don't think it ever was intended so that you guys, so that all of us can go and ride what we wanted to ride as, you know, as stress-free and as easy as possible. I just don't think you make $1 billion from that. I think that system already existed for the most part, and they weren't happy with that for whatever reason. So
the problem, though, the problem with that, and, you know, there could be all the outrage. So we'll spew on Twitter and
sure.
hear about it. And, you know, I'm sure every other podcast and blogger or, you know, and, you know, Disney aficionado on Twitter will, you know, go off on it, whatever. Even if they all do, that is perhaps 1-2% of the people who go to Disney World.
I know. I understand that.
And Disney, Bob Iger could give a crap about us.
I understand.
He knows the 98% of the people who go there, you know, once every 5 years don't know the difference. They don't know the difference. They don't know that the old FastPass system was better. They just, oh, okay, I could book Beauty and the Beast stage show, I guess. All right, we'll go there at 10 o'clock, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, they are, you know, moved along the Disney path like a bunch of a herd of cattle, which is exactly what Disney wants.
Yep. And they invested $1 billion to make it happen. And that's what's happening.
It's so atrocious.
Well, on that another happy note... Is that it for the world news?
Unless you want to talk about cameras, yeah, that's it for the world news.
Well, you know, the one thing I did want to—I don't want to talk about cameras, but one thing I did want to mention to you is just to talk about disappointed Disney fans. Is I saw on—I think it was a Disney Parks blog today—I saw that they're commemorating the 30th anniversary of Horizons.
Oh yes,
with a new T-shirt. So, Mike, my question was: does Disney do this just to re-aggravate people? I mean, are they really going to make a lot of money off of an extinct a T-shirt of an extinct ride?
I'm sure people will buy it, sure. I'm waiting for my Seabase Alpha T-shirt, but that's neither here nor there.
Hey, I might actually consider that one.
I would get that one, absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, go to the Disney Parks blog and see this.
Yeah, Horizons is...
It's one of those things that people really do pine away for. It's... Like Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, it's Epcot's Mr. Toad's.
I have to tell you, I loved Horizons. I really did. I thought it was a terrific attraction. I loved it. But nobody was ever on it.
Nobody was ever on it, Mike. Ever.
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 Ever. It's like what imagination is now. If there were more than 10 people waiting to get on a ride vehicle, it'd be like, wow, where do all these people come from?
Exactly. Exactly.
And now, you know, 20 years later or whatever it was, you know, how long ago did it close? Whatever it was.
A long time.
Early 90s, right?
Yep.
Yeah. All these years, I mean, all the Epcot fans and, you know, whatever, talk about Horizons. And believe me, like I said, I thought it was a terrific attraction.
Right.
Part of the appeal to me, to be honest, was the fact that you could walk right on it.
Exactly. Exactly. Anyway, let's take another break. We're going to come back and discuss the Wilderness Explorers on Radio Harambe in just a moment. Coming back. Welcome back to Radio Harambe. I am Dave McBride. Joining me from the coast of Kenya, looking for a very strange little rodent, is Safari Mike. And Mike, how are you?
I'm doing well. We're spotting those golden rump elephant shrews.
You just like to say the word rumped as often as possible.
I do. They do have gold rumps. So, I mean, I'll say rumps one more time. Rump.
So this is our feature segment of the show. And we are going to discuss the Wilderness Explorers game. And Mike, in order to do that, you have brought in a few other rodents, a different species of rodents, to help us discuss this game. Would you like to introduce them?
Sure. Dare I say a couple of experts. We brought in Discoverer Megan. Say hi.
Hi.
And Explorer Mickey. Say hi.
Jumbo, everyone.
Well, he's got his lines written out for him, huh? Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We want to talk about the Wilderness Explorers. This is an interactive game that happens throughout the park. We're going to let you explain it. I'll start off by saying this. I've never done it. Obviously, I've been there a few times and seen the signage and everything out there, and I think it's great. Just even the little aesthetic things that they've thrown in have looked terrific. It has been met with what can only be described as praise. I have yet to hear somebody who said this was silly or stupid or we didn't enjoy it, adult or child. But it is geared towards kids, so that's why I think the both of us felt it was a good idea to bring a couple of Rugrats onto the program to get their perspective on it, because, like I said, I have never done it, so I have little to say on the subject. So let Mike start off by just explaining a little bit of what it is. I mean, when we say interactive game, but what exactly does that mean?
Okay, so it's an interactive game, but it's not an interactive game in the sense that, Phineas and Ferb is, or the Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom is that there is no technology involved with it. You sign up, you are a wilderness explorer, and for those of you who don't know, the wilderness explorer, Russell was a wilderness explorer from the movie Up. And it's themed around that particular movie, which is, by the way, my personal favorite Pixar movie. Mm-hmm. And you are given a book to receive badges, much like a Cub Scout would or a Girl Scout, and you have to go around the park earning badges. And the book is your guide to doing it. And the book is actually pretty nicely put together. It's about 40 pages. Each badge takes up a page or two and explains what it is you have to do.
Let's talk about something you said there real quick, which was it has nothing to do with technology, or it doesn't use technology. Now, I know nothing about either of the other games, but just give a little example of what you do in the other games that do use technology and compare it to this one.
Okay, so in Phineas and Ferb, the game Around the World Showcase, which it's the Phineas and Ferb World Showcase Adventure, I think.
Which used to be Kim Possible, right? It used to be a Kim Possible thing.
Right. So you are given a cell phone, and you go to various countries in the World Showcase on missions from the cast of Phineas and Ferb. But in the midst of that, you have to go to different sections of the different pavilions, and they use technology. Like there's a talking parrot in Mexico.
Oh, okay, okay.
You know, that kind of stuff. Now with the Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom, that's even more tech specific. You are given cards, and you go to different windows and things like that within lands in the Magic Kingdom, and you use your card. They're spell cards, and you hold up the card, and it activates some sort of spell, and it tells a story where you're trying to, catch Cruella de Vil, et cetera, et cetera. So they're very tech oriented, those games.
Okay. So let's, rather than comparing it directly to, now that we have that kind of as a base, let's go through the nuts and bolts of the game itself.
Okay.
So you begin, I would imagine, at the big kiosk in Discovery Island that says Wilderness Explorers here, or something to that effect.
Correct. That's where you begin and that's where you end.
Okay.
So that's where you get your book and you're set off on your merry way. You're given the whole Wilderness Explorers, credo at that time. And you're told what to do. And you go off to your different adventures.
Now, for people, you may have mentioned this, but this is like a Cub Scouts kind of thing, Wilderness Explorers. Right? You would say it's like a scout kind of thing.
Correct. Correct. And there are troop leaders and there are badge guides, and they have different costumes throughout the park for, to help you guide you as to what you're looking for.
Very cool. That explains a couple of the costumes that I wasn't really aware of what I was looking at. Okay. So you get your book, you get your instructions, and then off you go. So let's do it this way, Mike, because I know a lot of people with Disney. don't like to talk about, don't like spoilers. They don't want to know the answers to games. They don't want to know, you know, where things are hidden and things like that. So I'm going to give everybody right now a spoiler alert. I am going to take those shackles off you because I want you to explain what this is about. And I don't think you can really do it without giving away a couple of these things. So you guys talk about the game, how it worked, you know, give a couple examples of some of the things that you did. And don't worry about spoiling it for anybody. They can fast forward.
Okay, well, first of all, you have, there's a lot of badges that you have to get. And they are located, you know, throughout the park. Megan, why don't you tell Dave all the different lands that you have to go to get the different badges? Where do you have to go?
Everything.
Well, that's not helpful. Where specifically?
You want to help her, Mick?
Well, there's a few in Pangani. That's Africa, that's Harambe. There's some in the Maharaj Jungle Trek, Asia. There's three in Dino Land, and six, I believe, in Rafiki's, and that's all I can remember.
Okay, so.
So, right, there are a whole bunch of different places to go to get these badges. The only ones that they don't have any badges in is Camp Mini Mickey, but as we all know, Camp Mini Mickey's not long for this world anyway, so.
Okay, right.
It'll be interesting to see if they put it in an Avatar land, but be that as it may.
So let's have each one of the two of them.
Okay.
Describe to me the process of earning a badge. Any one, doesn't matter, whichever one they could remember. The process of what you had to do, where you had to go, the whole thing to earning one badge.
Okay. Mickey, go ahead. You want to give a badge?
So let's say, for example, the Animal Find badge. You're going to circle the animals that you have found, and you're going to, and if you found most of the animals, you'll get the badge.
Why don't you give them a couple of examples of the animals that you have to find?
Yeah, so you're supposed to find my personal favorite, the okapi, the crocodile, the hippopotamus, the tortoise, an elephant, and like tigers and other animals that you would find around the Animal Kingdom, mostly Africa and Asia, but there's some from different areas.
And how do you know which animals you need to find?
There's pictures of them and with their names under them on the badge pages itself. And like I said, there will be the names under there, and you'll circle the ones that you found.
The interesting thing about this particular one that he picked is that, unlike some of the others, Dave, this one actually covers the whole park. So while most of them are specific to Africa or to Asia or Dino Land, this one you have to go all over. So, you know, the crocodile is found obviously in Africa. The tiger is in Asia. In Asia. The porcupine is over by the Tree of Life, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, that is like a park expansive one as opposed to some of the others.
Okay, what about Meg?
Okay.
Well, in the insect badge, you take a little, there's a little question, and your troop leader tells you, she or him asks you what you picked and tells you about bugs.
That's actually one of my personal favorites. That's over by the Tree of Life, like where the exit is for It's Tough to Be a Bug. And it's actually in this little path that's down by the river that nobody ever goes to. And, you know, there's live insects there that he shows you, right?
Yeah.
And
ew.
And one thing I should point out that I didn't point out at the beginning is we use the term badges. That's a loose term.
Right.
They're actually stickers that you get. So each time you get one, they'll give you a sticker that you put on the page where, you know, that badge corresponds to.
Okay. I have a question. Anybody can answer this. When I was on Kilimanjaro Safaris, which I rode probably about 12 times in 5 days, every time the driver would say, "And for you wilderness explorers out there, the truck we are driving is called Simba One." Why did they do that? Do you remember?
Go ahead, Meg.
There's a badge that you have to put Simba One down. It's a secret code.
That's so you can earn your safari badge.
Now, did you guys earn all the badges?
Yes.
Yeah.
But separately, or were you keeping one book?
We had like three books.
Three books.
Each of the kids had a book. We had a book too, actually. We didn't fill ours out.
And did either one of you find the talking dog?
What talking dog?
In the movie, there's a talking dog.
Oh, Doug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is not there. He is at a meet and greet. We have been at the past, but we didn't do that this time.
So the talking dog doesn't tell you the answer to the questions.
That's too bad. That would be awesome, but he has a cheat sheet. One time I yelled out squirrel and he looked behind him. And
that's good. Okay, so a couple of questions for you.
Okay.
First, your favorite thing that you did. And Mike, you can answer this too, because from what I understand, Mike, you had your own book.
I had my own book, but I didn't complete it, really.
Well, then you're just not as good as they are.
I am not a senior wilderness explorer.
Doesn't surprise
me. I'm a senior, but not a senior wilderness explorer.
Can you have the first name Safari, Mike, if you're not a senior wilderness explorer? This is something you're going to need to have to go down there and finish, you know, in order for you to be.
That's probably a fair point, actually.
So each one of you, tell me the favorite thing about the Wilderness Explorers.
Okay, Mick, why don't you start this one off?
My favorite thing is basically that, it's based on Up, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. It's my favorite Disney Pixar movie. It's, like, probably my third favorite movie in general, and it's just pure Up, and that's why I like it so much.
Okay, it's your third favorite movie, so I assume your first favorite was Avatar, right?
No.
Oh, jeez.
He's actually pro Avatar, Land Dave, so don't.
I got somebody.
There's much better things that can happen than that.
Stay with your pro Avatar, because then that means you're the next Safari Mike. Okay, Meg, your favorite thing.
I like how there's a bunch of activities, like a bunch of different ones, and that you can do and learn stuff.
And what would be your favorite one of those things?
Favorite badge?
Which one do you remember the most?
All right, Meg, why don't you answer favorite badge first?
Yeah.
I like the animal find badge because I like finding all the animals like everywhere in the park.
And Mickey, what's your favorite badge?
I would probably say the Harambe radio badge. The Harambe radio badge, I think it's...
Wait a minute, the what?
Harambe radio badge, not Radio Harambe badge.
Oh, I was going to say they got it wrong.
Cool. They did get it wrong.
It's actually called the ham radio badge, but that's okay.
Oh, okay, because I was about to send my lawyers down there.
But it's in Harambe, so he's right about that.
Well, yeah. I think it's abbreviated, but... My favorite part about that badge is that you get to actually listen to a radio.
Cool.
That I believe is near a not real safari truck, but I think it's a model of it. But anyway, you get to listen to the radio. And you have to listen very carefully because it's going to say different. You're going to have to answer one of the codes. And the question it's going to ask you, what you have to listen for the codes that it's going to say.
Right.
And it's going to ask you like what the code means. And you're going to have to check the code off. And then you're going to have to write in a secret code word. And I'm not going to say the code. But that you give away.
That's probably a good idea. That was a spoiler you probably shouldn't give away.
But you have to listen for a secret code word, which is a code that's going to tell you what the...
Very cool.
Yeah, so it sounds like almost like there's like this little radio over by Pangani, and you have to listen carefully for all these little clues, as Mickey was saying, so that right. You fill it into your fill it in. And you know, the good thing about this is you just don't show up and the cast member will give you the badge. So like, this is a good example of one of those. You actually have to listen to this and you have to get it right.
Yeah.
And once you get it right, that's when they'll give you the badge.
So you actually have to tell the cast member the answer and the cast member gives you the badge.
It's not even telling the cast member. You have to fill it out on the form here.
Oh, and then okay. All right.
So in this particular, I'll give you an example of this one. So it says requirements for this badge, right? So number one is the wilderness explorers have set up a ham radio to hear what is happening on the Harambe Reserve. Listen to the ranger for the following codes. And then there's a list of codes and you have to check off the one he actually says. And then write write the code for the following phrase. New elephant baby spotted, and then you have to fill in what the code word that they say right after that.
Okay.
And by the way, it's not Little Red, so don't worry about that. So once you get that right, you then go to the badge guide who has all the stickers, and you say, "Here, look, I get it right," and he'll give you the sticker.
Okay. As long as it's not the Radio Harambe badge, I guess I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Mike, did you have a favorite one?
It was probably... If it wasn't the insect one, it was, you know what one I liked is you talked to, it was the, I think it was the cultural badge where you would actually, you had to engage a conversation with somebody from a foreign land.
Oh, that's Africa, a great idea.
And, you know, they would tell you something about the land, like, you know, maybe South Africa has, you know, this many languages or something like that. And you know what? And that kind of brings the point, what makes this game kind of separates it to me, and what we've talked about this before in the past, is that the Animal Kingdom cast members are the best because they have such interaction with the guests as opposed to all the other parks, in my opinion. And this just illustrates that more. These guides are constantly talking to the guests and trying to teach them things, whether it's animals or, in this case, you know, a place in Africa or something.
That's really cool. Now, let's not be all rosy about it. Was there anything about it that you didn't like?
You mean like a least favorite badge kind of thing?
The least favorite badge or just something that you thought, eh, that was kind of silly. Maybe they could get rid of that. I mean, you know, whatever. Just something that you thought, was there anything at all? I mean, the answer could be no. I liked it, all of it. But, I mean, is there anything about it that you could tweak or, you know, wouldn't be perfect?
Sure. All right, we'll let Megan start off with this one. All right, Mickey, go ahead. You go.
Well, this is a tough one. This is tough.
Is it tough because you liked most of it?
I liked most of it.
Okay.
Well, I like the way that the cast members are more interactive than just, like, cell phones or interactive mirrors.
Right.
By interactive mirrors, I'm making a reference to the Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom.
Right.
But it's just... I think that it could be... That there can be a little bit more, interaction. Because... A little bit more interaction because some of the badges you did off on your own, and then you would just go to the thing and they would just take the book and give you a sticker. They wouldn't say anything at all.
Oh, so you like the ones, you would like them to all be the ones with the interaction with the cast member, not
yes.
just a few. Okay, all right.
And sort of to go hand in hand kind of with that is that, you know, this game does rely a lot on the cast member.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have, if you do get a cast member who's just sort of nonchalant about it, not really into it, you know, that could lessen the experience a little bit. It does rely to some degree, you know, much like, you know, the Jungle Cruise relies on the skipper
sure.
or Safari relies on the driver.
Right.
A lot of it, you know, relies on how into it the guide is.
Okay. And what about Meg? Did she have something she would like to see change or didn't like?
I don't really like the hiking badge.
And what was the hiking badge? Did you have to hike?
Yeah, you just walk a trail and answer questions.
Pangani?
Yeah, it was Pangani. Yeah, Pangani. Yeah.
Just too much walking for you, Meg?
Well, you got to draw your sketchbook.
Would it have been better if they gave you a motorcycle to drive the trail?
Cool.
Okay, and a question for the kids specifically.
Well, I didn't go yet.
Oh, that's right. We got to listen to this. Got to listen to the soon-to-be former Safari Mike's. Go ahead.
I have to say, there was one called the hand-washing badge. Which you would go, you know, you go into the pets, and you know, to the Rafiki's. And
yes, yeah.
And the only thing you had to do to get the badge was to wash your hands on the way out. That seemed kind of lame to me.
Yeah, that's kind of a layup one, huh?
It's a little bit of a layup. I'll give you that. Well,
maybe it's just teaching kids to wash their hands.
That animals are dirty?
Yeah.
I think they already know that.
Well, I think kids know it, but I think it's a good idea that Safari Mike had to wash his hands because he often doesn't, from what I understand.
Well, you have to be one with the wilderness, Dave.
That's what I'm saying. So I want to ask the kids, is there anything that they learned from this? Was there any little piece of information? Because it's been about a month since you guys did this. So is there any piece of information that you learned that sticks in your head that you'll take out of this?
Go ahead, Mick.
Well, there wasn't much.
I guess he knows a lot already.
Oh, my God. Really hard.
Yeah, well, he goes to the park so many darn times, there's probably nothing they can teach him.
There's nothing else I can really learn.
Was there a badge that stuck out that like you learned something where you said, I didn't know that?
Probably that Safari Mike doesn't wash his hands enough.
That's what I was thinking, actually.
What about Meg? Meg, did you learn anything or no?
Oh, Meg actually has a pretty good one, actually.
Go ahead, Meg.
I learned how to write my name in Thailand.
Right.
Yeah.
And
cool.
So the Asian culture badge where you meet somebody from Asia, and this particular person was from Thailand, and you would tell them what your name was, and he wrote it in that particular alphabet.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Right. And they said that they have like 100-something letters or something like that.
See, there you go.
You learned something.
You learned something. All right, for all of you, compare it to the other games. Mike, did you do the other games? Have you done the other games?
Not this time around, but we did do Sorcerer of the Magic Kingdom. We have done Kim Possible. We have done... Agent P in the Phineas and Ferb one. The only one we haven't done yet is the new pirate game that they started in Adventureland. We did not bother with that one this time around.
Okay, so compare it to the other games and rank it. Is it the best? Is it the second best? Is it the worst? Compare it to the other games and rank it.
Go ahead, Megan.
I think it's a lot better because I think it goes like everywhere in the park. Like Kim Possible only goes in World Showcase, so you don't have, like, a big park to explore. And I think it's the best.
Okay, that's a fair enough answer.
How about you, Mick?
On a scale of 1 to 10, 900. That's how good it is. Yeah. It is very good. I think it is much better than the other ones. It's just so much better, and I think it has something to do that it's in my favorite park, and I really enjoy the Animal Kingdom. I enjoy the message that it's giving to people, and I think if you have kids, your kids would just die for it.
Now, how many badges did you guys say there you had to earn?
There are over 30.
Now, can you do this all in one day?
Or there are 31 badges. Megan counted for me.
Can you do that? Can you do this? Can you do all 31 badges in a single day? It seems like this could be pretty time consuming.
Go ahead, Mick.
It is time consuming. It's very time consuming. I think if you went to the park, rope drop to when it closed, I think you could get it done and still have time to go on your favorite rides, but I would not do it all in one day. It's just a lot of work and a lot of walking, and it's just tiring, and I love it. I'm not saying anything bad about it.
Yeah, yeah. So Mike, or any of you, so the other games that we're talking about, is this a lot more, so this is a lot more in depth than those? Because the other ones, they can be done all in one sort of 2-hour period, can't they?
You know, we didn't complete the Sorcerers of the Magic. See, the other ones are very, well, they're all kind of like we never completed Phineas and Ferb or Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom. We just did like a couple of missions in Phineas and Ferb. You know, we did a couple of Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom things. I mean, they could take some time if you really want to do all of them. Wilderness Lodge is probably a little bit more time consuming than these, just because there's so many badges. I mean, some of them are a little bit more, a little bit quicker than some of the others. But just to go out searching for them and finding them and then doing them, you know, it does take quite a bit of time. We did ours over, Megan, how long did we take to do ours?
I think 2 days.
2 different days? Okay.
No, I thought it was the whole, like, every day.
Well, we were there for 4 days. For 4 days, but one day we didn't do it at all, for sure. Oh, yeah.
So this is get your book, do a few, come back tomorrow, do a few more, come back a couple of days. It's that kind of thing. You bring your whole book home with you and bring it back.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it, I think. And even if you don't even complete it, you know, it's still a lot of fun to just to do at least a handful. I think on one episode I told you, get the book and just do a badge or two just to get a feel for it.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun just to do that. I mean, you don't have to really, you know, go commando and do the whole thing if you don't want to. But if you do the whole thing, they do something for you at the end. Megan, do you remember what they did at the end of the game?
I think they did the handshake thing. Like a W and then a thing that they do. Just like a handshake kind of thing.
Kind of.
The wilderness must be explored. Ka, ka, rar.
Yeah, they'd have this little ceremony at the end, of course, if you become a senior wilderness explorer, right?
An explorer is a friend to all, be it plant or fish or tiny mole.
So, anything else we want to add here before we wrap it up?
No, I just, you know, I think this is a great addition to the Animal Kingdom. It'll be interesting to see if they expand it, if they change it at any point in time. I mean, these books are well done. So even if you, I have to tell you, even if you just do a couple of badges, but you can leaf through the book whenever you want and like learn some things about, you know, animal nutrition or recycling and, you know, all these different types of little issues and stuff that you can learn about. So it's great just to pick up the free book, and it does help make the Animal Kingdom a quote unquote full day park.
Cool, guys. Thank you very much.
Okay.
And go back to send the kids back to the exploration and looking for small rodents.
We're going to go look for golden rumps.
Well, thank you once again also for listening to Radio Harambe. To learn more about Disney's Animal Kingdom, we invite you to visit our website, jomboeveryone.com. There you'll find the internet's only guide to Disney's Animal Kingdom, including reviews of attractions, restaurants, and shows, tons of photo galleries, lots of information about animals and conservation. While we're there, we also ask you to visit our conservation page and see how we can all help save wildlife. You can find both of us on Twitter, both of us being Mike and I. I am at Radio Harambe. Safari Mike is at Jombo Everyone. You can join him and his 40 million Twitter followers or whatever it's up to now. We are also on Facebook and YouTube. You can find those links at jomboeveryone.com. Don't forget about our conservation store, where we have some exclusive stuff, including our great new Not a Half Day Park t-shirts. We also have some great animal designs there too. They look great. We donate the profits to our conservation partners. That's zazzle.com/jomboeveryone. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes. Rate us. Leave us a review there as well. It really does help get the word out about the show. You can also listen to us on Stitcher and Podbean. So, for Safari Mike, and I forget, it's Explorer Megan, Mickey, I forget which one's which.
Explorer Mickey and Discoverer Megan.
And I am Dave McBride, Quaharini, go well, and thank you for listening to Radio Harambe. Now